Welcome back to part two of More Than Football with Robbie Cornthwaite. If you didn't hear part one, check it out on the Triple M app. We talked about his time with us as a Red.
I was the perfect age. The A-League was just starting. You had to have three players under the age of 20. Mm-hmm. Nobody really knew what was going on, so they just picked three local kids. They picked me, Tony Hatzis, and Michael Matriciani, where nowadays they go and get the best three under 20s in Australia. Yeah. So if that was the case, I probably wouldn't have got picked.
Just going back to when you first got into the Adelaide United team, this is a bit of a silly question, but the fans pretty quickly took to calling you cornflakes.
Yeah.
Could you hear that from the crowd?
Yeah, I could hear that.
Did it bother you?
No. A lot of people called me that over the years, or Kellogg's or whatever. Yeah. A little bit disappointed I never got a Kellogg sponsorship, if I'm honest, but there's still time, Kellogg's.
there is still time.
Yeah, no, that was fine. No, that's nice. I mean, I suppose it's a little bit... it brings a different element to who you are. And I think there was even a game where the guy had a cornflakes box on his head with the eyes cut out maybe or something. So that was good. Yeah. But I embraced that. Even when I was, for my 21st birthday, my invitations were the little boxes of cornflakes, you know, the ones you get in a hotel lobby and breakfast.
Yep.
So I sent those out for my party. So I embraced that. I liked it.
Again, like you mentioned about, the Champions League run. Let's talk about that because for so many fans, there's a great Fox Sports special about it as well that you can find on KO. That run was just an unbelievable run. And you seem to pop up and score crucial goals. It was almost like you just turned into a goal-scoring machine. When we needed a goal, when we needed 1-0 wins, there was Robert Cornthwaite.
Yeah, no, that was... it's obviously very, very fond memories and one of the best times of my career, if not the best. And as I say, we're at that age. I think we're 22, 23 years old. And I say we because, me and Scott Jamieson lived together. And, one of my best mates, Jay Spaniolo, was there as well. So it was just so much fun. And we were just on that wave of momentum. The following from the fans, the media jumped on board. Yeah. You know, we had... I don't know exactly, but I'll say a couple hundred people to the airport when we came back from Uzbekistan, I think it was. And that whole thing, I watched that documentary only probably about 6 months ago.
Yep.
I saw someone tweet about it and I thought, can't remember that, I watched it when it was first made.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I'm going to watch it again. And it just, brought back so many memories, so much fun. And even just all the things that happened at the airport in Uzbekistan and the goals that I popped up with. It was just, obviously, we wish we'd won it. The funny thing is, like, not winning it, that doesn't really feel that disappointing.
Okay.
Of course, at the time, you were disappointed. Yeah, but looking back on it, knowing what we achieved, at the time, it was like, history making.
Yeah.
Looking back on the fact that we lost the final, it doesn't really cut me that much. Mm-hmm. I just think they were far better than us and we probably didn't play all that well. So that's what you get. If you got robbed, then you'd probably be upset. But we weren't even close.
Yeah, and look, they were absolute quality. Mm. Endo was in the team.
Yeah.
And, they were an unbelievable team to come up against. And that run was just so crazy. And I remember, the group stage, we had, okay crowds at Coopers. I happen to go to every home game.
Yeah.
And then just as we progressed, it's just the crowd got bigger and bigger. And then by the end of it, I think it was a quarter final, then the semi, and then that final was just packed and the atmosphere was best.
I think I've heard it a couple of times. I'm probably one of the people that said it as well. But when you go to those FFA Cup finals at Hindmarsh or even, the other matches...
against
Victory. People say like, oh, this reminds me of the ACL run.
Oh,
people say that. They say, oh, this kind of, because it's that midweek crowd as well for the cup and stuff.
Yeah.
It's got that Champions League feel about it.
It does. Yeah. There's just that vibe and that energy about the place. It's just wish we could, just bottle that and do that every week.
Well, let's hope for Adelaide United back in the ACL soon.
Yeah. Well, that'd be great. The last run wasn't a great one.
No.
But, anyway, we're not talking about that. But, but yeah, you said you don't really remember necessarily specifics of the games. So even those goals, do I dare ask?
The one against Pohang, that was in the first game of the group stage away. I think it was like the fifth minute or something.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody was picking us in that game. And then we came out with a
2-0 win, I think it was. Yeah. Lucas Pantelis with a corner swung it in. So
yep.
And I think why that one, remember that one, is because I ended up playing in Korea 4 years. I played in that stadium a number of times. Pohang was like my local derby as well when I was in Korea.
Yeah.
So that one stands out. And of course, the winner against Kashima when I scored the own goal in the first leg was the villain. And then scored the winner at Highmarsh, sent us through to the semifinals. Obviously, that's the one that people really remember me for. Obviously, it wasn't even the best of headers. It wasn't even the best of goals, but it hit the back of the net. Yeah. And I don't even actually know why I was in the box.
Really?
Because if you watch the build-up to that goal, like I was playing right back, and Cassio swung it in, and I'm like on the penalty spot. So I think Travis was playing right wing, and he like drifted inside.
Okay.
I'd like to say it was my brilliant timing and reading of the game that got me there. But we needed a goal. So obviously that one. Hopefully people remember that one for a long, long time.
I think, you know, if you go and talk to Reds fans, that's probably one of the ones they're going to bring up to you first.
Yeah.
But while we're talking about goals, the goggle celebration.
Yeah.
Tell us, what's that about?
So Nikolai Topper-Stanley. Mm-hmm. He plays for Newcastle and he's played for Wanderers and everything. When we were in the Ollie Roos together, he used to do that with one finger.
Right.
And it was like a kind of a joke of saying, like, if someone had zero chance of doing something, he'd say zero. And he'd put it like as that was his way of doing a zero.
Right.
So then I can't remember how much longer after that, I was at home and I was just joking around with my younger sister. And I did two, like a mask. And I said, oh, I'm going to do this if I score. And she was like, don't do that. That's embarrassing. Like, so then I was like, well, if she's going to be embarrassed, then I'm definitely going to do it. So then I just started doing it and just called on. And then like in Asia, people like started calling it the Batman, the superhero.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of just, became sort of, it's like a superhero mask, I suppose. Yeah. So,
there's a couple of pretty iconic photos on Getty Images.
Yeah. Well, there was a couple in South Korea because I did it in South Korea as well. And there was actually like a billboard outside of my stadium. It was like a pylon like of my photo and face doing that. So, and even for Selangor in Malaysia, they're like people know it.
Yeah.
And it was actually a guy that played in the youth team for Adelaide United and a few other clubs, Dane Milovanovic, I think his surname is.
Yep.
And he started doing it in Indonesia and it took off there as well. People started making t-shirts everything. So, it was good fun.
Have you picked out a player that maybe you could pass it down to?
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I'll have to hold auditions because some people can't do it. Some people can't actually do it. So,
especially in the heat of the moment, you've scored.
That's the thing with the Socceroos. When I scored for the Socceroos, I never did it because I was just too excited and I just forgot.
Yeah.
I was like, if there was any time to do it,
that
it was going to get the most attention. That was the one. So, let myself down there.
So your move to Korea,
Jeonnam
Dragons.
Yep.
How did that come about? And just explain that move. When did you first hear about it? And then
leaving Adelaide. I think it was just a couple of days after the season had ended at United. Rinnie Coolen was the coach, and again, it's about timing for me again because he had me on the bench. He probably wasn't the biggest fan of mine, which is fine, and. Mm-hmm. Sort of on the, I think it was like the Thursday after the season finished, I was in the city here and I was going to the travel agents to book a holiday to Bali.
Mm-hmm.
And we stopped to get some lunch first, me and my now wife. And I got a call from an agent called Zelko Sousa. I didn't know Zelko. And he just said, oh, I got some interest from you in South Korea. This is the team. This is what the money and all that sort of stuff is. What are you thinking? And knowing that, maybe wasn't in Coolen's plans, I thought, this sounds good. And then on Monday, I was on the plane. I was gone. So, the transfer fee I can say now was, I don't know if it was reported at the time, it was only $125,000. So pretty low money compared to what some people go for. And I just spoke to Michael Petrillo, who was in charge at the time. He spoke to the coach. They were happy. So, paid that. And, that was it. I was off.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, signed a two-year deal. And then after a year, signed for another 3 years. So, good timing is probably one of the best things I did in my life.
Yeah. And tell us about that experience in Korea. I mean, it's a complete change.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you mentioned just before about just looking out the bus window and,
yeah,
a completely different place. So what's that like?
The thing is, when you're in Asia, quite often, I don't know if it's because English is the second language for the people there, but it can feel like they're very blunt. It can feel like they're very forthright. And basically when I landed, it was like, you're here to lead the team. You're here to be the general at the back. And this is what we're expecting from you. And I was like, oh, what? okay. Because to be honest, when I went there, I was thinking, this is a great opportunity, but I don't even know if I'm good enough, just, you know, just a normal standard A-League player pretty much. And then I'm going to the K-League. I'm like, oh, no. And then when I got there and I saw the training, I was like, oh, wow, this is actually very, very good. But I think, you know, one thing I've been pretty good at is adapting and fitting in well wherever I've gone. So, yeah, just worked hard. And I probably didn't play the first 4 or 5 games. They left me out. And then we had a cup game where they played like the second team.
Mm-hmm.
And this, well, there's no really second team, but, right, you know, a lot of the sort of players that hadn't been playing.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a really good win. And then from that team, he kept maybe 8 of them in the first 11, and we played against Suwon away, which is like the biggest game of the year, and we won 2-1. And then from there, I just played every game.
Yeah, yeah, wow.
And so did a few others.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Yeah, that was, again, good timing.
Yeah, and then yeah. How long you played? You had a lot of appearances there. I think it was just shy of 100.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of not that I really care, but there was a couple of cup competitions that the stats never got recorded for.
Okay.
So official K-League games, I was less than 100, but I would have played more than 100 for the club.
Yeah, okay.
And again, I scored a few goals, which was nice. Right. Yeah,
yeah. I can't remember. It was on a par with United, I think.
Yeah, I think it was
looking at the stats.
Just under 10 or something.
Yeah.
So that was good. And in Asia, they love a centre-back that can score a goal. So,
And that was a time, I think, they were just snapping up Australian centre-backs.
Yeah, so it was like me, Sasha, Luke Devere was there, mm-hmm. Adrian Madashi was there, another guy, Alex Jovanovic, who's still there.
Yep.
Is
it because of the physicality?
Eddie Bosner. Yeah, of course, the physicality. Yeah. Of course, Sasha doing well.
Yep.
Sasha won the Asian Champions League with Seongnam.
Yep.
And then, yeah, off the back of that, Alex Wilkinson went to Jeonbuk. He won like 2 or 3 K-League titles.
Yep.
So, yeah, and you see Adam Taggart just won the Golden Boot.
That's right.
Terry Antonis. So, yeah, Aussies done all right there. There's been a few that haven't done well as well, like anywhere. But, yeah, I think they just like our work ethic and our hunger and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, look, it's hard to compare K-League with A-League and everything, but, you know, like, what are some of the differences? I mean, it's a pretty, you know, well-developed football culture over there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's just technique of the players. You can see when we play in the Asian Champions League, more often than not, they're good. They've obviously... They choose their foreigners very, very well. You know, they have good research and good connections to get good foreigners. It's just, it's very, very demanding physically, the training. The games are okay. Like, the games can be quite scrappy, even more scrappy than the A-League. But in terms of training, like, it's very, very, very tough. And, you know, in pre-season, we'd do double session Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. Right. And we'd play a game on Wednesday and Saturday. So that's for, like, only 6 to 7 weeks though, because it's a lot shorter, but it's difficult.
Do you think the climate between the two countries obviously plays a part, because it's so hot here?
Well, it's so hot there actually.
Oh, yeah,
so actually they've got the two extremes. So in winter it's like in Seoul
freezing.
It can be -10
right,
and snowing. So when that's when pre-season's on. So you usually go away. So we used to go to Thailand every year for 3 weeks. Some teams go to Turkey. Some go to Japan, which is a little bit cooler.
Yeah.
Warmer. And then in summer, it's like 37, 38.
Okay.
So
humid though?
Yeah, really humid.
Right.
A bit like North Queensland.
Okay.
So they've got really like both extremes. But the players are freaks.
Yeah.
They're so strong. You know, we'd train at 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. And they'd wake up at 6 a.m. to go to the gym themselves.
Right.
So three, and there'll be like 15 of them in there, not like one or two, but you've got to squat a lot, 40. So,
right.
And at the clubhouse, you know, all the players live in the one place.
Mm-hmm.
They've got chefs, washing ladies, full-time physios and doctors that live there. You can see them any time of the day. You've got a cafeteria. You've got games room with pool tables and TVs and table tennis. Right. Yeah, it's everything's there.
Yeah, literally another
level. Literally, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah. And then you went to Selangor?
Yep.
Yep. So again, like, you know, you come to the end of time of career, you know, I guess you might have had a few different options on the table and head off to Malaysia.
Yeah, well, I mean, I never told this story actually, so you'll like this.
Oh, awesome.
When I was in South Korea, I had an offer to go to China.
Okay.
So the transfer fee was about 900,000, considering the Korean club had only paid 100 grand, and obviously my salary was a lot more. So I wanted to go, and the Korean Cheonam said, "No, we want $1 million." So the Chinese club said no. So I said, I'll make up the difference, obviously, because obviously my salary was going up. I said, I'll give the extra 100, thinking, all right, cool. And then Cheonam Dragons were like, nah, we don't want you to go. At this time, I was playing two positions. So if we were losing, I'd play as a striker, and if we were winning, I'd play as a defender.
Right.
So they're like, you're too valuable to us.
Okay.
And I was spewing. Like, I was really, really pissed off. And then a year later, I was coming to my end of my 4 years in Korea. It was time for me to move on. And I was like, all right, cool. Where am I going to go? Like, rubbing my hands together sort of thing. And I had basically nothing. Like, I couldn't find anything. I wanted to maybe go to Thailand, China, another club in South Korea. You know, A-League was a possibility, but I wanted to try to stay in Asia. And basically, Malaysia was the only place where really wanted me bad enough and I could still make a really good living.
Okay.
But I didn't really want to go there. I was like, Malaysia's rubbish. But anyway, that's all I had. I went there and again, like, it worked out perfectly for me. Ended up winning the Malaysian Cup. Became again like a bit of a cult hero.
Yeah.
Made history, all that kind of stuff. So
Not as rubbish as you first thought.
No.
It's very good.
In a way, it's more difficult because you don't have all those things you had in South Korea.
Yeah.
You got to get by all yourself. You know, you might have to train when you don't want to, eat food you don't want to, stay in a hotel you don't want to, all these types of things. You know, I've spoken about it before. The training ground where I trained was terrible. There was like no showers or anything. You have to shower in a hose from a tap. And some players like would say,
sounds like amateur football.
Yeah. Some players would say like, oh, well, you're getting paid a lot of money. Like, who cares? But when you're actually there and you have to do it every day, you're like, you don't care how much money you're getting. You're like, this is shit. You know, like, you got to have respect for yourself. And like, but I just adapted, just dealt with it, just did what I needed to do. And yeah, and then got on with the job.
Yeah. Geez. And then you end up back in Australia with Western Sydney. We'll talk a little bit about it. You went to Western Sydney.
Yeah.
And you know, played there for how many years was it in the end? It felt like you were there for quite a long time.
No, I was only there a year and a half.
Really?
Yeah. Season and a half. So,
I thought it was like 3 years. It felt like
Well,
maybe not to you.
Well, it felt like that because it was bloody tough as well with Popper. But I made no mistakes about no secrets about the fact that Popper's the best coach I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, you know, his record in the A-League's very good despite the fact he hasn't won a grand final. And yeah, obviously very honoured to wear the captain's armband. The armband there was just a shame it wasn't for longer, but I had another opportunity to go back to Malaysia, which I did. And then, you know, 6 months later I was retired.
Yeah, wow.
Happened quite quickly.
Was there any thoughts of going back to Sydney when you first came back to Australia?
Nah, Adelaide's home. Grew up in Adelaide. I got my family home up in the Adelaide Hills. Yep. It was always the plan to come back here.
Okay.
And you know, even for my wife being away for 8 years or whatever it was from home, two kids now.
Yeah.
To be overseas in Asia and not have any support like from friends and family, it's pretty difficult, you know, especially for the partners. You know, I'm going away for away games or 3, 4, or 5 days at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and they're at home with she's at home with the two kids. You can't just call up your mom or something and say, can you look after them? Like, so yeah, we're enjoying ourselves back in Adelaide now. We've got all our family, all my wife's family's here, all my family's here. So yeah, we're getting plenty of babysitters and just for them to hang around their cousins and stuff. It's brilliant.
Yeah, that's good. How old are your kids now?
My daughter's 5 in January and my son's just over 18 months. So, got a nice place in the hills. You know, sometimes we get kangaroos and koalas on there. So they, kids love that and they're just running around outside.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Are you living close to Mick Maroney's farm?
So I went to Mick Maroney's farm. I've been twice actually. He's doing really well out there. It's completely different to where I live. He's sort of, you know, I'm not sure how many people have sort of seen the story I did on him, but he's building the house pretty much himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got a few animals and stuff like that. It's a bit more farmy than mine.
Yeah.
But he's got the kangaroos and the koalas as well. And it's great. I love it. So I speak to Mick a little bit now.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool story.
Yeah.
I got to see. You can find it on social media. It was on Channel 7.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is now we message each other basically and say, like, oh, I got this chainsaw. Or he'll be like, oh, I bought this tractor. Like, I got this ride on lawnmower. And we take photos and we send it to him. And then I build a fence. with my father-in-law. Took probably about 4 or 5 days, and then he wants to build a fence. So he said, "Oh, who'd you get to do your mesh?" And I was like, "Oh, call this fence guy."
Did you ever think you'd be talking about these things and getting excited?
Nah. Well, I wasn't a handyman at all. Like, I didn't even know how to use a drill or a bloody screwdriver. Yeah. So, but now, you know, I've got the big whippersnipper with a harness. I've got the chainsaw, and my father-in-law's got a farm, so he's taught me how to use it all properly. Right. So I chop my fingers off.
So
I'm out. I probably do, honest to God, I'll probably do between 10 and 15 hours of gardening a week.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Oh, the only problem is I don't get paid to do it.
Well, yeah, I find gardening hard.
Yeah. But I'm OCD. If I see one weed, I'm like, I've got to get it.
Well, actually, weeding, like, once you start, you just got to get it all. But I'm like you. I'm not a handyman at all. So I was impressed a couple of years ago that I was actually even able to build like a tiny like garden shed with my dad a couple of years ago. And I'm like, oh, wow, I could actually
do this. Have a look on my Instagram, there's a picture of me in a garden shed that I built.
Oh, yeah.
So all right, I'm in that boat too.
Yeah. Follow Robbie Cornthwaite on Instagram and check out his shed.
Yeah.
All right, look, we'll probably wrap it up there. So I want to thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
Being a good chat. Maybe we'll do it again soon.
Yep.
Look, you're welcome to come in and record a Legends podcast or an X-Player podcast anytime you want.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Robbie.
Appreciate pleasure. It. Thanks very much. Bye.
That does it for part two of More Than Football with Robbie Cornthwaite. Thanks to Robbie for coming in and having a chat. Make sure you stay tuned to the Triple M app. More episodes coming soon, but check out our back catalogue as well with Bruce Chitay and Nathan Constantopoulos, Dylan Holmes as well from the W League team.